All right, I'm gonna go ahead and get started. Thank you all for joining us today. So this is the October, so we put this at the absolute last day we could in October for the October shared LSP update. I wanted to first say happy Halloween to everyone who celebrates it, and hopefully all of you have worn your Alma tiaras to work, and then as you go trick-or-treating, you should consider wearing your Alma tiaras or whatever headgear you had during some of our more interesting in-person trainings. So one of the first things that we started to do is had a support meeting with the managers from the support team and the tier two managers to look at cases. So I gave a summary of that meeting to the institutional leads, and hopefully if you're somebody who has responsibility where you want to see what some of the support issues that we brought up and that we discussed at that meeting were, that your institutional lead would have sent that information to you. So in addition to a meeting that we have at least set up for the next, the near future, every single month with our support managers, we had an additional meeting with acquisitions, ERM, and discovery working group members, and then SLSS staff met with some of the content operations administrators, so the head of content operations and a few other people from her team, mostly to talk about CZ, linking, things like that. So some of the things that we did in the short term and just some adjustments that we'll ask you to make from a support standpoint, I'll just go through those quickly. So one of the things that we did is we just went through hundreds of cases and escalated, provided feedback that we weren't happy with the responsiveness that we were getting from whoever was assigned to the case. A lot of these were caught in kind of a zone where it was still in implementations assignment and it was unclear who was supposed to pick that up. So we've clarified a lot of that with Ex Libris. I escalated a lot of linking cases. So this is kind of a trend that I want to just talk about a little bit. So by linking cases, I mean, you tried to set up a database, you tried to set up a journal and the linking is not working, or there's some sort of a problem with the linking parameters. So that was something that we said that we were definitely not happy with when we talked to content operations. It was a topic that we discussed multiple times with the support managers, and they were dedicated to helping us address the issues that we had outstanding. And I think that you will see some improvement there. But if it's something where linking is not working, then you shouldn't put that in as a low priority. You should put it in as a high priority. And if you don't get a response back in a few days, then that's something that you would want to escalate. And I put a link to the escalation policy where you can email the escalation path for content operations if it's something community zone related. And you can, if it's something Alma related, there's a separate escalation path for that. Carrie indicates that they're still having problems with Gale linking. I've worked with a lot of campuses on that, and there's a variety of reasons that Gale linking may not be working, because Gale made a major change right around when we, right after we went live. If the issue is with Ex Libris on the Gale linking side, escalate the case. And make sure it's not something that's easy proxy or related in some other way. But we have seen a pattern of Gale linking issues, and we've tried to address many of them, but I just wanted to say that there's a whole lot of reasons why there might be Gale linking problems. Connie asked, How will we know if a case that we entered has been escalated? So you would have seen in the case that we have escalated, and I posted to the institutional leads the cases that we had escalated, so yours would have been in there. But I would say if you're worried about double escalating something and you don't want to escalate something that we may have escalated, don't worry about that. Just escalate it, and the support manager will blame us, not you, and I'm okay with that. And I think they're perfectly fine with getting two escalations as well. We don't have an I hope that answered your question, Connie, but generally you would see some marker in the case. Either we did feedback or we put something in there, or we would have posted it out as far as a case number, but don't hesitate to escalate. So Amy, we haven't put out an FAQ for Gale issues because they are so wide-ranging that it's a variety of reasons. So I don't think that we'll be able to put one of those out soon because it would just be really, it would be many different things that would be not related to many, but it's a good thing. Let me talk to Michelle and see if we think we can gather enough of them together, as far as like iterations to Michelle's smiling. It's like, yes, thank you for that, right? To see if we can pull together the things that we've tried to fix scale issues. So what we plan on is monthly support meetings in which we will look at cases, we will look at trends. But I just wanted to put that out there of escalate, put high priority, and don't be afraid to tell them that you're not happy with the responses that you're getting. We have to do that too. I think, it's building a relationship and they understand more about our environments as well. So don't hesitate to do that escalation yourself, especially if it's something that is preventing access to content that you're licensing and paying for. So either today or tomorrow, Karen from the SLSS team will be sending out some a survey to talk to ask about institutional leads and just to do a check-in to see if the institutional leads are going to be the same moving forward. So we will need institutional leads going forward. It's going to be less intensive than it has been for implementation, but we adopted a system that changes every single month, and we do need to tell you about things. We need to have a dedicated channel where we can have people paying attention to what we're sending them because it's really hard to get people's attention if we're just sending out to listservs, et cetera. We're really trying to keep the institutional leads base camp pretty free of noise so that we, when we send something, it's important that you, that you listen to it and distribute that information. So, please do take a look at that. And if we get no response from your campus, we'll be escalating it above and above and above after we reach out to a few times, because if you're not paying attention as an institutional lead, then we need your director or whoever's in charge of the library to be aware that we're having trouble getting responses from your institutional lead. We've had persistent, and it's been a prolonged issue for us that right around 50% of the institutional leads never respond, never take any action on any information that we ask from them. And many times we have to start going through the staff at that library to figure out what we can do in different scenarios and in two specific areas, or to help you in two specific areas, and those are resource sharing and cataloging. So believe me, if this were, my preferred situation, we would deal with one person and that one person would handle the communication at the library, but that does not work almost ever at 50% of the campuses. So we need to establish a second and third contact for resource sharing, one for resource sharing and one for cataloging, because those are the areas that really do affect everyone. And we need to often reach out and get a response, help troubleshoot. We've been doing a lot of configuration updates on both the cataloging and the resource sharing end. And, you know, honestly, if the institutional lead is really the problem, the bottleneck of communication, we intend to go around that person directly to the others, you know, who we can get responses from those functional areas. So know why we're doing that. It's not that we want to talk, you know, that we want to fragment communication even further, but in, you know, we just need to kind of keep moving forward, and we need to have a reliable, you know, communication channel. If you're at a campus where the institutional lead is working well, you know you're working well, you're facilitating all that communication, then fine, put yourself as the as the primary contact for cataloging and resource sharing. But if you know that you're not doing your job as the institutional lead and facilitating communication, give us the contact information for somebody who will respond to us. Any questions on that? So that should be coming out very soon. And don't be surprised if we will send you multiple follow-ups. And if you do not respond to us, even to check that you're the institutional lead, then we will follow up to say, you know, we're going to go above you. So Heidi puts a point, one primary and a secondary contact, that's an option. And what I will say is, most of the communication issues I'm talking about really don't come down to vacations as much as, you know, we understand if like somebody's on vacation, we get an autoresponder, that's understandable. What we get is nothing for months and months and months and months and months. You know, if you want to put a secondary contact for the institutional lead there, absolutely, that's going to be an option, as it has been in the past, but we do need to broaden it out a little bit. All right. So we have a new shared library services staff. Many of you know her. I don't know if she's on the call. Probably so. Jennifer Smathers.
Hi,
how's it going, Jennifer? I didn't use your funny funny picture with the Viking hat, but you know, good picture nonetheless. She's going to be working with extended support. She's going to be on the SLSS team, you know, for at least the next year. And what she's doing is helping us to work with more complex extended support engagements and the full management of Alma and Primo to establish a better relationship with the campuses. Esta, Susan, and others have been doing just a fantastic job of handling all of the issues that the campuses are giving us. But, you know, what we're seeing is that some more coordination of that will, I think, make things smoother on both ends. So that's the primary role that Jennifer is going to play for, you know, the near futures, with just, you know, acting as the lead and the relationship manager between SLSS and the campuses who have extended support. So welcome, Jennifer. I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, who's going to tell you about the exciting things we have coming up with the Central Discovery Index. You ready, Michelle?
I am ready.
Awesome.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the CDI, which is coming. I did post this on Basecamp, so this will be a little bit of review, but this is something that I think we can't talk about enough. This is very exciting. What this is they're changing how the indexing is working for search. So you're not going to have to go out to the PCI and activate things separately for search anymore. Once we set up the CDI and go live with it, which is going to happen over winter break, you will be able to activate content both for full text and for searching at the same time if you choose to do that. If you choose to activate them separately, you can still do that if you want to have time to make sure that things work. We are part of the early adopter group, and we are going to start testing in mid-November, and we have a CDI task force that's set up to help with that testing, and we'll report out to Basecamp with information about what we find. Luckily, we aren't the complete earliest of the early people. There is a working group right now going through outside of SUNY and making sure that the new system works, so we're going to benefit from everything that they find in the initial beta testing. Some of the great things about this is that right now it takes 7 to 10 days for things to show up as held, meaning that they'll show in an unexpanded search in your system. And that timing is going to go from 7 to 10 days to 24 to 48 hours, which is super exciting. EBSCO, you're no longer going to need to set up alternate coverage. It's just going to work right from the index that's in ALMA. This, for any of you who had Summon before we switched to ALMA, this is going to work a lot more like the indexing in Summon. And I know that Summon is much missed by people, so I'm pretty happy about that. And as I mentioned, Go Live will take place during winter break, and we will be working hard to make sure that this is a smooth transition for everybody. And then I just put the link to my Basecamp post, which has a little bit more information than what I'm talking about right here. So you can go ahead, Shannon. To the next slide. Oh, Shannon, do you want to talk about this?
Yeah. So any questions on CDI just before we move on? You'll be hearing more from the task force, but you know, I think this is going to be, you know, a major improvement, and you know, we will be moving forward on this in the next in the next 2 months to implement. We would have had to do this within the next, 4 or 5 months anyway. So, this made sense for us to do it now. All right. So another initiative that we have going on that, that I forgot someone or it got cut off. So the membership is incorrect, and I'll update it before we post the slides. But Marion Stern from Binghamton is also on the task force, but I didn't put her on this slide, so apologies on that. But we found that there was a lot of questions about how the API-based ordering worked. So really, there's only two API-based ordering services, one ProQuest Oasis, the other out of Gobi. So we put together a task force that's led by Maggie to look at how we need to configure the APIs in our own network zone environment and provide more information to campuses on how that configuration is needs to happen. So that task force is starting their work now, and I think tentatively we're looking at ending in early 2020, sometime in the January, February timeframe. Any questions on that? All right. Michelle, you want to take this or you want me to talk about it?
I can talk about it if you like. As Shannon mentioned, the system is changing all the time, and in November, Primo is going to have some updates. The beautiful thing about this is if you hate something in Primo, you can hope that it will change at some point. It's not like we have to wait 2 years for a new Aleph update. So the link at the top is to the full release notes, and again, I did mention this on Basecamp as well, so you should be getting this release by the end of the weekend. One of the things I think is really nice is that there's going to be a way to browse your journals by category. I know that in the past, this is really helpful if you're trying to give faculty members a sense of what journals you have access to online for their areas. It's good for program reviews. So that capability is coming. There will also be a widget that you can add to your Alma dashboard that lets you see real-time PrimoV analytics, so you can see what kinds of things people are searching a lot more easily. There are going to be improved patron tools in terms of selecting items from a list, putting them in your favorites. You'll be able to set up tagging and labels for different searches. And then there are some accessibility improvements coming as well. So that's all a very good thing. So I'm all set, Shannon.
Great. Yeah. And Yvonne brought up that there was the, you can configure the number of minutes that an email gets delayed after being received. So that's a, you know, the hold notices. Yeah. So Binghamton brought up the question of this, you know, oops, my slide on the API-based ordering task force. So I only put in the charge, the approved charge. So, you know, that's a good question, is how to handle monographs. But, you know, I think certainly any charge can be expanded if there's, you know, something relevant to review, such as you're saying, ebook ordering, and how to put things in the institution zone versus the network zone. So this is mostly just the charge for the group. But, you know, I would imagine if that's something important, then you'll definitely look at it as part of the task force. All right, and just a reminder that Cafe Almas are on Thursdays. Saw many of you here. Jeff Goldstein did an awesome job at emceeing Cafe Alma, and he did circulation, or really just fulfillment. A lot of interesting things they're doing, both kind of inside and outside of Alma today. And then we're going to talk about patron records next week. So take a look at the Cafe Alma online to see how to sign up, and then any of the sessions, et cetera, for, if you want to attend. And then if you want to present something that you're working on and you want to get feedback or show others what you're doing or host, all of that information is in the Cafe Alma guide as well. Any, Michelle, anything you want to add on that, or Esther or others on Cafe Alma?
No, I just would say thanks to everybody who's been attending. We've been getting between 30 to 50 people every week, and that is fantastic. We're thrilled that people are coming. So we're pretty psyched that this is working. So come and talk to your peers about what you're doing.
All right, Michelle, you want to take this? Sorry to keep putting it over to you. Yeah.
No, that's cool. So another thing we just wanted to mention is that for those of you who have LibAnswers, you're probably familiar with the kinds of stats you can get from it. So we've been exploring that as the SLSS group, just to see what we could get out of it. We are posting some stats monthly out on the shared LSP overview guide, just on the top level. You know, if you want to see kind of what we're up to, what FAQs we're making, how many questions we're answering a month. So we are putting that stuff out there. I started exploring something called Query Spy, which again, you may be familiar with if you have LibAnswers, but I did not know about it, and it's really cool. You can see what people are searching, and then it'll tell you if they found a match for what they were looking for. It'll tell you what they clicked on. It'll tell you if they found a really good direct match. So there's a screenshot for some of the stats that you can get from that. So we're definitely going to be using this information to try and enhance our FAQs and figure out what people are looking for that we don't have as a match. Yes, Heidi, I agree. It's very cool. I was very excited. I was nerding out about Query Spy. So anyway, that's some of the things that we're doing. So we're trying to have more of a, you know, a data focused way to figure out what people need help with. So feel free to use the search, and know that if you're searching, we will definitely keep track of what you're looking for and try and make things better.
Excellent. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Tim for resource sharing update.
Great. Thank you, Shannon. So a couple days ago, I posted statistics, request volumes broken down by campus for the month of September. I will be doing the same for the month of October as soon as the month is officially over. I just wanted to give you a sneak peek at what those statistics look like. Here you can see the top 10 borrowers and the top 10 lenders within SUNY. I won't go through and read all of them, but you can see we've got Buffalo in the lead on the borrowing side by a pretty fair amount, and I'll be talking about that more in just a minute. On the lending side, Albany is our top lender. We also have a lot of lending happening at Binghamton as well. So Shannon, if you could head to the next slide, please. Like I said, Buffalo's borrowing volume is by far higher than anyone else's. And the reason behind that is Buffalo is the only library within the SUNY system that has added the SUNY scope to their everything search. You actually see a little screen capture I took of their Primo landing page where it actually lists the SUNY catalog as being part of the everything search. So when users at Buffalo are just doing, you know, that default everything search, they're getting records for books at other SUNY institutions, and they're using the request functionality. So this really goes to show how Primo configuration can have an impact on your resource sharing. Specifically, if you're making that SUNY scope easily searchable by your students, you will see a corresponding rise in resource sharing activity at your campus. Now, I have done some customized rota management at Buffalo to distribute their requests a little differently than I am everywhere else. And I do want to thank them for allowing me to do that. And it has helped. Like for instance, if you look back at September statistics, you'll notice that Binghamton is the leading lender within SUNY by a fairly wide margin. This is for October. So I've, in spreading things out more, I've evened things out. Binghamton's not, actually, they're no longer in the lead. They're right now slightly behind Albany, but they're more in line with the other university centers. So we're not hitting them up as hard. Also back in September, Buffalo State and Erie County Community College had surprisingly high lending volumes. So they're more in line with where they ought to be now. And fortunately, we've managed to do this without having any negative impact on Buffalo's turnaround time. So again, I want to thank them for allowing me to handle their requests a little more differently. So Shannon, if you could head to the next slide. So the next thing I want to talk about are turnaround times. The overall turnaround time for the entire SUNY system is 4.3 days, which I think is quite good. And it's worth noting that this turnaround time measures the amount of time that elapses from the moment the user submits the request to the moment that the user is notified that the request is available for pickup. So this includes overnight, it includes weekends, holidays. So 4.3 days is quite good. I'm pleased. I've also broken down turnaround time by rota, and the results, you know, continue to surprise me. I know I talked about this a bit in the last update, and I really just wanted to repeat it to show that that was not a statistical fluke, what we were seeing last month. Like you see here for the Western rota, the turnaround time they're getting from libraries within their own rota versus the Eastern rota is virtually identical. There's also not a huge difference between turnaround times from the East and the West rota for libraries within the East rota. It's a little more significant than it is out West, but it's still not very big. The places where we are seeing, you know, major turnaround time differences are mainly between the New York City rota and the East and West rotas, particularly the West rotas. So one thing this information really says to me is that this one size fits all approach to rota management that we started out with might not be the best way to go. particularly, you know, by having separate east and west ROTAs for all of SUNY, it's making it harder to evenly distribute requests as much as we can. So that's something, this is data I will continue to look at and think about, and I will discuss with the Access Services and Resource Sharing Working Group any thoughts I have about, you know, changes that we might be able to make that where we could help, you know, better distribute requests throughout SUNY without having any negative impact on turnaround time. So Shannon, if you could head to the next slide, please. So fill rates. Our fill rates are getting better. They're still lower than I would have expected. I am still looking at unfilled requests to determine why they went unfilled. And I'm finding in the vast majority of instances, there was no problem with the system where the system missed a potential lending library. A lot of the unfilled requests I'm seeing are instances where there's only one or two copies within the entire SUNY system and they're both checked out. Or there are some libraries who have implemented the WorldCat scope within Primo. And you know, there are millions and millions of WorldCat records that have no holdings within SUNY, yet users are able to submit resource sharing requests for those. And when they do that, the locate process, you know, is not able to find a lender because there are none. So the requests get kicked straight out to ILLiad. That's not to say that there aren't any problems. I do still occasionally see requests where I don't understand why the request didn't go to a particular lender. I do have an active case with Ex Libris, and I am working with them to identify issues that we might be having with the locate process. It's something I will continue to do because I would like to get that number higher than it currently is. Although I don't know how much further above 60% we'll ever be able to get it, but we can try. All right, Shannon, if you could head to the next slide. So a little more talk about the November ALMA release. I know we spoke about it a little bit just a few minutes ago, but one other thing that's part of this release is there's going to be a new method for exporting unfilled resource sharing requests from ALMA to ILLiad. And this new method, it does not use ILLiad's email import feature. It uses an API instead. And one of the really nice things about this is this should take care of that equals 09 issue that I know a lot of you've been seeing where these emails coming out of ALMA and being imported into ILLiad, if they have special characters in them anywhere, can really throw off the import process. And you wind up getting a lot of junk in the ILLiad request form. I've had the opportunity to do some testing with this already, and it looks a lot better. We didn't see any issues with, you know, accent marks or copyright symbols causing things to just go haywire on the ILLiad side. I don't know. I think this is something reasonable people could disagree on, whether this is good or bad. The API, what it'll do when it's trying to export a request, it will first check to make sure that the user exists in ILLiad. If it doesn't, it will not export the request. The request will stay in ALMA. Currently, what the email import feature does, it creates the request and then just fails to match it to a user. So you have to manually create the account in ILLiad and then match it. This new feature, the request will stay in ALMA. Nothing will happen in ILLiad. You will have the option to manually create the ILLiad request and then resend the request to ILLiad and get it to be automatically created that way once there is a user record for ALMA to link to. Or what you could do, you could from within ALMA email the user or cancel the request with an open URL link to ILLiad that would prompt the user to create an ILLiad account. Actually, I see the question from Carrie. Well, actually, we will record that session. And that recording will be made available to you. But yes, there will be a session about this on November 5th. And I will post a link to the sign-up page in chat right now. So there that is for you, if you are interested and have yet to sign up. All right, if you could head to the next slide, please.
Yeah, and I just want to say thanks to Upstate and Buffalo and Albany for testing, because I think, you know, the testing helped get the API-based ordering out into the world a little bit faster.
Yep. I want to thank Heidi Webb, Stephanie Helscher at Upstate, Angela Persico at Albany, and Nikki Colello and Lisa McLaughlin at Buffalo for all helping me out with this. And one last thing I want to talk about are lost and damaged resource sharing items. We are going to be centrally managing billing for those. I will be running on an annual basis an analytics report for lost and damaged items. And then reconciling that report, we're going to be using a standard $90 replacement fee for all lost and damaged items. And then, you know, based on that standard fee and my reconciliation, we'll be adjusting your library's SLC dues. So for instance, if you lose one book but have two of your books lost, you'll be $90 ahead and you'll have $90 subtracted from your SLC dues. And in order for all of this to work, we're going to need to handle lost and damaged items in a consistent manner throughout SUNY. So the Access Services and Resource Sharing Working Group will be developing policies and workflows detailing, you know, exactly what you should do when an item is lost or damaged.
So just a note on that, that goes through the recharge, and there's not going to be an additional, you know, there's not going to be explanatory notes on the SLC that it's this much because of the, you know, $90 coming off or coming on, that, you know, we'll send you that information and you're going to have to kind of interpret that with the SLC dues just because of how the recharge process works.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon. Yep. So that was everything I had on resource sharing. Any questions about anything?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Looks like I'm emceeing today. Turn it over to Maggie. If she's on, she can talk a little bit about NZ stuff.
I'm on. You can just go to the next slide, Shannon.
Great.
Hi, everyone. So I'm going to begin at the end of the semester, so approximately around December 20th, during Christmas break and holiday break, winter break. I will be starting the purge. I will be cleaning up unused bib records in the network zone. Currently, we have 1,654,926 NZ bib records that are not being used. That's about 17% of our bib records that live in the NZ. There's a little over 9 million. And this will also help clean up any primo discoverability searches for campuses that are using the SUNY catalog, because they would show up because they exist in our network zone. So, I just want to make everybody aware that I'm going to start this process. It won't impact any linking to the network zone, because if you're using the job, if it does not exist, you can share it with the network. Also, if you are using the share with network functionality in the MD editor, as long as it's configured to match the NZ, it will share properly to the network or match to the network zone. So just talking about that, like, share with network functionality, I'll be doing a session coming up in November on that, which will be talked about later. But it's an interesting process to have to clean up all these records. There's varying reasons why they show up. There are holdings that were not removed in OCLC for SUNY campuses. There is also, anytime new records are added to your IZ, they're published to OCLC with publishing profiles. they will then be brought into the network zone that way. So this will be an ongoing process. I plan to do it monthly to identify records that are not being used and to delete them to keep our network zone as clean as possible. And also down the road, as we have to pay for bibliographic records, it will reduce the cost if we are not also paying for bib records that we are not using and there are no holdings for.
Maggie, did you see the question in chat?
Oh, sorry, not yet. So, okay, great. So the question is, we are now discovering bibs that we have that are not linked, but may have our holdings in OCLC. So what is the recommendation to resolve this? We're thinking about putting the OCLC number and updating the batch to NZ. So are you saying that you have bib records that don't have OCLC numbers? I'm not understanding that. Oh, you mean, okay, let me just think. So you have bib records that are not linked, you have holdings in OCLC, but you don't have these records anymore, is that correct? Okay, so what you're gonna need to do is you will, if your holdings are still in OCLC, yes, you can do that. You can do a batch delete of your holdings if you have the OCLC numbers, and that would be a very good recommendation to clean up your holdings. But if you are saying, So if your records don't have the OCLC number, yes, completely. Just go in and add the 035, put in the OCLC number, and then you can, you know, if you have all those OCLC numbers, you know, you have a set of those records, you can easily run the job to link them. You can also do the share with network, but I really strongly suggest waiting to use that until I do the session so you make sure your configurations are correct. But yeah, that would be no problem. I would add the 035 so that it can be linked to the network zone successfully.
All right, other questions?
It's no problem if I'm deleting them, because even if you use the job, if it is not in the network zone, if you use it according, I did a session on this and the recording and there's slide deck for this. Even if it's not in the network zone, it will show up there eventually again, but you can do the job to relink it. And as long as you click, there's a setting to be able to add it to the network zone if it is not there. So it is no problem if I've deleted these records and removed them, because either they're going to come back because your holdings still exist in OCLC when they've been updated, or you can just add them when you update, then you run the job to link to the network zone. So that won't cause any problems with me cleaning these records out at all. I have to go pull it up, Carrie, but I will go find the link for that for the session.
Right, and the key is, so after the, you know, one major purge, this will be happening on a monthly basis to do this and keep it up to date as much as we possibly can.
Correct.
All right, anything else, Maggie?
No, that's it. I'm going to go see if I can find the link for Carrie and others.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, so Jennifer is traveling today, so I'm going to do the training update. Just an example of some of the recent trainings that we've provided. We did assist loading, item policies demystified. Susan's in the middle of providing those, kind of important cleanup work to do to make sure everything is, you know, synced between fulfillment and your item records. And then Maggie's been doing a variety of identifying the correct bib record when ordering, and sets and jobs. We've been doing a fair amount of these, and the different approach that we've taken is that we are requiring registration for many of them. So here's some other upcoming trainings where Tim, the November 5th webinar on unfilled resource sharing requests and ILLiad. We're doing two analytics basics training. And, you know, I just wanted to comment on this a little bit because, you know, I've received lots of emails to say, where is the streaming portion for this? And our plan is that we're not going to do streaming for in-person sessions because the in-person sessions are going to be very much workshop-based. And just like the five in-person trainings that we did that were mostly resource management focused, we did not stream those. I mean, it's just virtually impossible to do a good in-person training where you have hands-on work going on and stream it and manage all of that. So just wanted to put that out there of like our overall approach is, you know, if we're doing in-person training for the most part, it's going to be much more hands-on and, you know, that's challenging to get a good space. And then usually those spaces with a lot of computers don't do streaming very well. And I do know that there are no good spots in New York State that are easy for everyone to get to. So, you know, apologies if we didn't get close enough to you. We're doing the best we can and trying to provide a space that is equally convenient or inconvenient to everyone. So just another, you know, example of some of the flavor of sessions that we're doing. We're trying to do a lot of the basics and having multiple sessions to try to limit the registration, even though I'm not sure that we will continue to do quite as many sessions as we're doing. So Tim's going to do something on resource sharing request lists and notes, et cetera, looking at LHR publishing profiles. And then as Maggie was talking about, sharing with the network functionality. And we do have one spot. So we recently purchased LibCal to have one space that you could go to register and see our upcoming trainings. And the URLs here, the LibCal calendar training. We will also post them throughout Basecamp as well. But to put the registration and everything in one place, LibCal seemed to be the easiest. So in December, we will have more training. So we understand we need to work around the holiday season. However, there is this sweet spot of time when we know that people are available because it's end of semester, but before the beginning of next semester. So we're trying to tune into academic calendars as much as we can. So we will have more coming out in December in a variety of areas. And we should have in the next few weeks, you know, we'll release this in the November LSP update, if not sooner, one place to find all of the training materials and better navigation. We've already made a lot of strides in that area already with lots of better metadata and navigation through to the different training materials. So more of the basics and then layering on some more of the, you know, more advanced things going on in the December into potentially January timeframe. And what we're working on now is a 6-month plan for all of our sessions so that we can put them out, maybe not down to the exact day and time, but at least the you know, the general areas when we will be offering training so that you can, you know, try to schedule your own time to take advantage of as much of the training as possible. So we're going to try to go out into at least the first quarter of 2020 and then try to project out always 6 months so that we're staying ahead of things and being a little bit more proactive rather than reactive, even though, you know, as new releases come out, we will continue to do reactive training as well. Let me look at the question, which I don't think is training related. Okay, so I think Maggie has responded to that. So any questions on training? We've made some adjustments where we're doing registration with smaller session sizes to try to get more involvement, more like a workshop. And we're assessing whether that is successful or not, whether it's leading to more engagement. And if it's not, then we will offer fewer sessions. So, you know, if something that you know, if it's something that you want, that there's a, you know, a workshop style and you attend one of the small group sessions and you don't participate, then we're just going to adjust and just have larger sessions because the, you know, the smaller sessions aren't having the effect that we would like them to have. All right. So another thing that we're looking for is that I've reached out in multiple different times and different channels to try to get a chair for the ALMA and PRIMO Enhancements and Improvements Coordination Task Force. So the details is on the Basecamp post on the slide. Let me know if you're interested. And you know, this is a good chance for us to develop processes where we can really tune all of the ways that Ex Libris accepts requests for improvements and try to be as strategic as we possibly can. If we don't end up having a task force, then you know, I think we'll continue to try to ask for improvements, but it's probably not going to be as effective as if we're really kind of throwing votes towards idea exchange and potentially NERS and other formal enhancement processes in addition to lobbying Ex Libris directly through you know, consortial channels too. All right, so I think this is the, you know, it's been about 6 months since I gave more than a few minutes for questions. So anybody have questions or further discussion on anything we've talked about today? Feel free to unmute yourself or type in the chat. Oh, nice. So Marianne has, let me see if I can share that. There's Marianne's tiara. Nice. Anybody have questions? All right. All right. I guess that's it. I'm going to stop the recording, stop sharing, and have a great